Survivors ready.
Go!
Yes, that's good with me.
I just started recording. Yes, dude.
No, people heard my normal voice. I don't usually talk like this.
I was going to go fill up my water bottle, but whatever. I guess fuck it.
Go fill up your water bottle.
No. We're doing this now. I'm not getting up.
So, quickly, while he's getting water, let's do the rest of the bracket.
Oh, man.
We don't have much time.
Connor, if you really want to fill up your water bottle, you
no,
can.
I don't. Okay?
I don't even want to anymore.
I don't want to because you want me to.
So welcome back.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Survivors Ready Pod.
I feel like that would be us on Survivor. Connor, if you really want to go to the water well, we really can.
Yeah. I know. Like, I need to go talk to you. Like, I know you want to, like, fill up your water.
And I'm like, no, I don't. What are you talking about?
He's like, could you fill it up for me? No, I don't think I could do it myself. I think you better come with.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to the Survivors Ready podcast. I'm so happy we keep having funny intros.
I didn't say anything.
Exactly. So this is part two. This is part two to the March Madness bracket. If you missed it last week, we did part one. Highly recommend it. It's our longest to date. And for all we know, this end could be another long boy. We will see.
And, I know, boys.
Speaking of long boys,
because they're tall.
Back to the brackets.
We did not anticipate how long the bracket would take.
I mean, I feel like we knew, but we just said, let's... We just didn't accept it.
We had hope, man. We had
yeah,
hope.
It's always just like, no, we can do it. Like, every time we do one of these, we're just like, all right, let's just do it faster. But then we end up just not doing it faster.
Yeah.
Well, it's also just because, it's not like in an actual March Madness thing where it's just like, all right, well, there's a clear winner, clear loser. And a lot of them, like, a lot of these, it's like, I feel passionate about and I want to argue my case.
Didn't we have, like, a long conversation about Terry Dietz and Corinne in, like, the second matchup?
Yeah. Because it was, like, they're so different.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was like, whoever's winning is just going to lose to Ozzy next round.
All right. Sweet 16, baby. First matchup, Ozzy versus Richard Hatch.
It's actually the round of 32. Yes,
this is actually the round of 32.
Oh, yeah, because it's 128.
Because I added a quadrant, or I added a round. So.
Yeah, I forgot because I was reading off the top.
Yeah. If we just want to, I'll just read off the 32 people that remain. And
go for it.
Comment below
who you think's gonna win it all.
Who you think's gonna win it all? So, the people remaining are Ozzy, Richard Hatch, Denise, Kelly Wentworth, Monica Culpepper, James Clement, Jerry Manthe, Jonathan Penner, Parvati Shallow, Natalie Anderson, Ethan Zahn, Malcolm Freeberg, Ceree Fields, Tom Westman, John Cochran, Andrea Belke, I think that's how you say it, I'm not sure. Tyson Apostle, Kim Spradlin-Wolf, oh, that's a cool one. Coach, Jeremy, Sandra, Todd, Amanda, Sarah Lacina, Tony, Michelle, oh, that's sad. Spencer, Boston Rob, Yule, Tommy, and Russell Hance.
I would say a great 32.
That's a great 32.
There's only one or two, I think.
Where, like, yeah, I was reading off and I was like, oh, that one?
Yeah, but, like, otherwise, I think it's a great 32. I think we got a great bunch of matchups coming up, and I'm ready to let's jump right in it with our first matchup of Ozzy and Richard Hatch.
A great crop of people.
We got the first winner of the show and the show's biggest challenge beast, golden boy type. So we got two big figureheads in the name of the show.
Yeah. I think Richard.
Basically, and what this matchup basically kind of shows is what part of the game do you like? Do you like strategy or do you like challenges? Because neither of them are really good social players.
True.
I would say Ozzy a little bit more so, but
I think purely because of his South Pacific game.
You could just see over time, Ozzy just gets a little bit more mean.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's funny that like some of these people like Richard, where it's like they have one good game, but it's like it just he told so much, you know, and he shaped the way the game was meant to be played. And like if there wasn't a Richard Hatch in season one, who knows how long it would have taken for an alliance to be made, you know, all these different things that like Richard thought of like, oh, this has to be what you do in this show to win or to get to the end.
Yeah.
He did it. And it's like, if he wasn't there, would they have like figured that out? I feel like he's just so ahead of his time, maybe more than anyone else in the whole show, which is why he's such a great winner and such a great season one winner. And he's my vote.
Pele?
To all of your correct points there about Richard Hatch.
They're all wrong.
But no, like I agree with everything you've said, but for me, this is purely going to line up to my emotional attachment to Ozzy. For me, even though he kind of teeters off on his other outings, I think he still competes very well in South Pacific. Fans vs. Favorites is kind of hit or miss. It's been a minute since I've watched it, so I don't really remember all of his gameplay. Yeah. And in Game Changers, he is, again, all right. I do think that all of his other outings are a bit more impressive than Richard Hatch in All-Stars. Because in All-Stars, we kind of just truly see the weakness in his social game. Because he's a great strategic player, and he had a great mind, especially so, like, literally so early on, the first winner. But for me, I think Ozzy is on my Survivor Mount Rushmore, and I don't have a way to consider Richard Hatch for that Mount Rushmore, aside from him being the first winner, you know?
All right.
So for that, I'm going to go Ozzy.
And for that reason, I am out. All right. So, between the two, I definitely like Ozzy more. I think he's more, I think like he's just fun to watch, and he's a good player. He's not a bad player by any means. I will say though, out of every four-time player, I think he's the most consistent. Out of every four-time player, I'm trying to think, he makes merge every single time.
Yeah, I think he's the only four-time player to make merge every time.
Yeah, one of the most consistent players of all time. Especially being his threat level, being able to make it through the pre-merge in every single season is definitely impressive. Two of his seasons, he was very close. He was one vote away, and he was one challenge away from winning two different seasons, which is pretty impressive. There's a lot of times you say, oh, well, like this player was one thing away from winning their season or a season that they were on. I don't know how many players that were one thing away from winning two different seasons. So that's pretty impressive. And in Micronesia, he was the winner until someone took him out. If he made it to the end on that season, he was going to win. He was in control. And Game Changers is his weakest game. But once again, still very impressive that he, like, right at the beginning, it was everybody's jumping off the boat. It's like, oh, who's going to swim for that thing? And they're like, nobody is. Ozzy's here. So it's like immediately people know his presence. But yet he still makes it that far is very impressive to me. That being said, the precedent that Richard Hatch sets is definitely something that you have to respect, and without him, the show isn't what it is. So it is definitely one of the hardest decisions we've had to make so far in this bracket.
One last thing to champion Richard. I do think that I think I've said before that I think a big reason Survivor is so great is that it often teaches lessons. And one of the biggest lessons, strictly being Ozzy's first season, where it was him versus Yule in the end. And by one vote, Yule wins because it was, do you vote for the challenge beast? Do you vote for the more strategic mind? And then Survivor, that season kind of taught us that the more impressive game is the more strategic mind. And I think that Richard shows that off a lot better than Ozzy does.
One last thing to champion Ozzy.
Yeah, petition for me, guys.
Okay, but then I have another one. So
mine's going to be really quick. If it weren't for Ozzy, Redemption Island would have been really, really boring in South Pacific. Because, like, imagine how different and how much more, like, much less interested we would have been had he gone, convinced his side to vote him out to go to Redemption Island, and then he loses on that first challenge, and then he's out. Oh man,
I will say, without Ozzy, I do think Redemption Island would be considered a failure, because I think Redemption Island in the original season was just kind of a dud. It was just there so Russell and Rob could get a second chance, because that season was just catered for them to go at it. Because, I mean, you look at it, everybody, like, their two tribes are a bunch of Ambers on Rob's tribe and then a bunch of young girls on Russell's tribe, because that's what he always gravitates to. And then they get a second chance. So it seems very – that's especially in the moment when that season came out, that's what a lot of people were feeling. But then with South Pacific, it was – more the use of Redemption Island was used more in strategy with Ozzy being voted out. So I think they made the Redemption Island twist better. But that being said, I still think my vote is going to go to Richard Hatch here.
Fair.
It's tough. I don't want to have to do it, but somebody has to win this whole thing.
We've got our gals, Denise Stapley versus Kelly Wentworth.
Mama D.
This is tough. Because the thing with Wentworth, which I'm definitely voting Wentworth here, but
I'm definitely voting Denise here.
I do think that I guess Denise's track record is better in terms of placement. You know, she won and then came in sixth, I think, in Winners at War. So, or if you don't count like coming back. Or no, I guess that was Natalie.
That was her second, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like Wentworth just was always in the limelight and was always an underdog, that I feel like her game was just a lot more impressive, you know. Other than, like, Denise pre-merge, sure, like, she made that huge Sandra move, which was really impressive. She just piped down afterwards, though, and we just didn't hear anything from her all merge, you know, where Wentworth, even in Edge of Extinction, where she didn't last that long, I think she still got like eighth or ninth or something. But I think that she embodied, you know, like playing hard the entire time, you know, whereas I think Denise had it a little easier both her games. And because Malcolm and Denise were a bit like JT and Fishback, where it was just like no one's going against them ever, you know. And I think that they just were able to run the season, which is very, very impressive. I think Wentworth just impresses me more playing from the bottom and played a lot more of a game of chess than Denise had to.
I would argue that Denise did still have to play a game where she had to maneuver with different people, and there was a lot of different decisions branching off in different ways. That was tough. I don't think it was nearly. Mm-hmm. It was one. She had an alliance that she rolled the whole way with, because her, like, the four of her, Malcolm, Scoop, and Lisa didn't get together till a little bit into the merge. There was definitely maneuvering within that. And I think that it's not as cut and clear as, and that's why another thing why I think Philippines is such a great season, because it's not normal.
Well, I just think maneuvering happened like with other people getting to Malcolm and Denise. It was a popularity vote of like, well, we all want to be with them. It's just, who are they going to choose to be with? You know, they were never on the chopping block, I feel like.
I agree. And don't get me wrong, I love a good play from the bottom game. I was a huge Xander champion last season. But I still think it is impressive to be at the top and hold it the whole way through.
Yeah.
I'm going to...
Friend of the show.
Also, one of them won, and yeah. One of them made it far both times. One of them got out pre-merge on their first time. So...
Yeah, it is hard being like, because I feel like I often like to mainly judge people based on like the best that they do, especially if it is a second time, you know, like if it is that like Cochran didn't do a whole lot on his first season, but he realized what he did and what he needed to do next time and completely did that. And Wentworth didn't do that in the same way because she didn't dominate like Cochran did the whole season. She was just able to keep herself in the game over and over again. But I think that, and I guess it's just up in the air of like what you believe is more impressive, you know, the play from the bottom or like the always dominate. I just feel like it's different in every scenario. But I feel like it's hard to judge her first game because, you know, she was just targeted super early. Sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. But if you learn from that the second time and you do so much better, it really like dumbs down your first time and makes me think of it a lot less than if it were to happen like a second time, like Aubrey, you know, where it's like her good season was her first one, then her other two seasons were way worse. And it's like, it's hard to like champion for you. Whereas Wentworth did the opposite, where it's like, fine, I'll fix myself.
I think for me, it is more impressive that Denise was able to win and then go sixth in Winners at War at that. I like, to Wentworth's credit, friend of the show, love her to death, fellow Seattleite. I think that overall in this format, like I said with Ozzy and Rich, I prefer Ozzy to like, I like Ozzy more, and in this scenario I do like Wentworth more, but for me it is hard to see a winner that on their second outing also went extremely far. Final six is a big achievement, and I don't know, man. It just feels right with the gut, so I'm going to vote Denise.
I will also say, though, that I feel like Second Chance is arguably a tougher season than Winners at War, especially if you weren't an oldie, you know? So I just personally feel like, you know, oh, she made it as far as she did, I don't think is as impressive as Wentworth making it, you know, further than that in Cambodia, which I feel like was a much harder season.
So Monica Culpepper versus James.
Yeah, Monica James. That's an interesting one.
It's an interesting one because I think this is probably the worst matchup we have in this round.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, Kelly couldn't have gone against either of them.
Right. For me... I love James to death, but I think this is the part where his voted out with two idols comes into factor. Monica
never did anything as detrimental.
Yeah. Even though I, like, to be honest, I don't remember her game too much from One World, she just was able to do so well socially that got her to the final tribal and second place. Instead of being voted out with two idols, she got second place.
And that's another thing, too. I think that she was a decision away or decision or two away from winning the game. If she, say she wins the final challenge, and votes out Tyson. Does she win that season?
I think so.
There or Tina came in for
yes. It. Yes. So if it's Monica Jervis and Tina.
I think so. Because Tina, she didn't do too much strategy wise. She didn't have.
I know she had friends on the jury, but is that really going to carry you when Monica was the one that got him out?
She definitely had more friends.
I especially think on another hand, Monica would also have a very strong advocate in Tyson, because Tyson was boys with Jervis, but we saw how he ripped into Jervis at Final Tribal. Do we possibly see that as that's Tyson's perception of the two players that he had sitting next to him, or was that purely just to dog on Jervis so that they didn't vote for him? I don't know.
I think that a part of it was when you look at their questions, especially like Hayden talking to Monica and stuff, it's just like if she was the reason why Tyson goes home, and it's just like, Monica, like you, I always question like what you were doing with the game, but then you made the decision to take Tyson out at the right time and it worked out for you. I think that's the way people would look at it. So I think that she very well could have won.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, I don't think James ever could, like, even regardless of the two idol play, regardless of the medevacs, I don't think he had what it took in any of his outings to win the season.
I think he gets hurt too much. I love him, though.
Still, like, he's a super likable guy.
But yeah.
It's just hard imagining him as a winner, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Jerry Mantle and Jonathan Penner. Penner is my friend Nick always says that Penner is too smart to win the game. And I feel like that's very true, you know. Or I always make fun of him because I'm like, I mean, it might not be that he's too smart. It might just be that he doesn't have good enough social skills.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't end up winning. But I feel like each game was more, or I guess not more impressive than the last, because the second one he got medevaced. But like Philippines was a huge turnaround bounce back season for him. And I feel like that cemented him as like one of the best ever.
100%.
Yeah. And I think he made a lot of moves that season. He did a lot of things that season that was super impressive. I think he had legitimately, without even being on the Mat Singh tribe, I think he had the biggest uphill battle that season of any player. Because when you think about it, Mat Singh, really all that did was just help Malcolm and Denise. Because Malcolm comes into Tandang as like the hero that they need to help their tribe, never going to be targeted. Everybody likes him. Denise comes in and nobody even wants to take her out. It's just because they already have their own problems. So that Mat Singh self implosion didn't really screw them over. It seemed like they're like, oh man, this sucks that we're on the worst tribe. It really just benefited them because they just, it's like, oh, we have two people that are going to go towards another alliance. When you look at Penner from the jump, Jeff Kent wanted him out. He had to try everything he could to try and work with those people so he wouldn't get voted out. So he had an uphill battle from that. When you get to the merge, he would have went out on one of those votes if he didn't win that immunity when he did. He would have been gone there. And then the conversation he had with Lisa, the one where he's like that personal like one-on-one that he has, totally flips Lisa's perception when he's talking with Scoop, and she's like, yeah, I kind of want to go with Penner. Because of that conversation. So I think he improved his game in a lot of aspects, for sure.
And with all due respect to Jerry, I don't think she has a performance like Penner's in Philippines.
Yeah, because I mean, Ilya and All Stars, I feel like she didn't have a say in a lot of that. And Heroes vs. Villains was like great for her. I feel like it was a great move on her part to say, all right, I'm flipping to Russell's side, and then made it very far because of it. I just feel like, again, you know, it was like Parvati and Russell ran that group. So I don't know how much say Jerry had within that group still. I think it was a great move to go to them, but I don't think she did a whole lot to get to the top of that.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think with all that being said, Penner's moving on.
Yep.
Peener.
I hardly know her.
Shut up.
Oh, shit. These are two great players.
Woo-wee.
Barbie and Natalie.
Both of them won one time and then came in second another.
Yeah. Arguable to both of them whether they should have gotten second. Because I think Natalie should have gotten third in Winners at War, and I think Harvey should have gotten first in
Yeah.
Villain.
Personally, again,
I mean, Parvati did vote for Natalie to win, so there's that. So maybe that's what Parvati's telling us right now.
Natalie. So.
Personally, this is going to come down to that Ozzy Rich vote earlier. Parvati is 100% probably the George Washington sized face on my Mount Rushmore. Like, she is up there. I don't think it's going to discredit Natalie at all. It is just unfortunate that she's going up against somebody that I could easily see going to the finals.
Yeah, it's sad because I am definitely thinking Parvati here. It's just that Natalie is such a great player.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no shade to her for the Edge of Extinction stuff in Winners at War. She did what she had to do. It's nothing against her. It's against the show for doing something stupid like that.
Yeah,
she did what she did to try and win. And her game in 29 may be the best end game ever of any player.
Yeah.
So
it's sad because it's like she had arguably the best end game ever, but also like in normal seasons, she got last.
Yeah.
Was it like she got like 20th, right? In Winners at War.
She was the first boot.
All right.
God, that's so stupid. Parvati's moving on.
We got some curly haired boys.
Hey.
Ethan Zahn versus Malcolm Freeberg.
Know what's really interesting here? Is my vote's going to Malcolm. And Ethan faced two winners and beat two winners, and I don't think he should beat a non-winner here, which is pretty crazy.
Two winners just to lose to a non-winner.
Kind of the flip side of the last matchup for me. While my heart is saying Malcolm, my head is saying Ethan. Here's why. Malcolm did have a solid strategy mindset going into Philippines, but I feel like a lot of that, not a lot, but a good portion of it was with Denise. And I feel like seeing his other outings, granted Game Changers is a very big asterisk up against, you know, JT causing his downfall. With that in mind, I don't know if Malcolm has the strategy to get him to the final tribal to where Ethan, I mean, to me more so like, yeah, respect your elders in the sense of Richard Hatch like coined the terms. He did what nobody else had literally done at that point. But I think in terms of social gameplay and social strategy, Ethan embodies it through and through. So that's why I'm voting Ethan.
So this is the reason why you're wrong. both of them played three times. Malcolm was one thing away from winning his first game. And not only if he won that challenge would he have won, but if he stayed with Denise and said, no, we're sticking together no matter what happens, and then they both vote for Lisa, they both vote for Malcolm. Malcolm gets a chance to do fire. I assume he beats Lisa in a fire-making challenge. So then he wins that way. So he was, for multiple ways, very close. So he screwed up in that aspect. Ethan wins his first game. Point Ethan. Second game, Malcolm basically controls his way to where he got to the merge. Ethan gets voted out pre-merge.
Both times, I think. It's Ethan in both his times coming back got out pretty early, didn't really get to do much.
But can Malcolm, can I factor in here?
I'm not
real
done.
Quick?
No, because I'm not done. Malcolm in Karamoan also made splashy plays with idols and stuff. So he was definitely in it strategy-wise. I think that he was just on the wrong side of the numbers, and it was hard to go the other way, especially with Cochran being his opposition. And a part of it was Cochran was definitely in charge. Cochran was definitely in charge, but it was not. It was one of those situations where the person in charge is so untouchable. Like people knew it, but couldn't do anything about it. So it was just he was on the wrong side of the numbers there, but he still made it farther. Still played a good game strategy and social wise in that one. When it comes to the third outing, Ethan once again voted out pre-merge very early, and Malcolm gets screwed over in a situation where he should not have went home because of JT, the person who I keep letting go through this bracket that I just fucking hate because of it. Because it's JT's fault why Malcolm didn't make it further. He should not have gone home on that vote. The season would have been so different because if Malcolm was still there, that tribe wouldn't have kept losing. They wouldn't have.
That's a wonder what would have happened if Malcolm stayed.
JT probably would still be there. Sandra would still be there.
I think...
So overall, I think Malcolm has played better.
Just to play another like devil's advocate here. To be fair, Ethan, why are you looking at me like that, Connor? Jesus, you're just looking at me like just keep on talking. You're gonna be wrong anyways.
Well, you are wrong, but you can continue.
To be fair, here on both of Ethan's outings, it wasn't exactly the most fair fight. In the sense that there weren't nearly as many, it just wasn't a fair game in All-Stars because there were only, what, how many winners in All-Stars?
Five or less.
So it was very easy from the get to target the winners, especially when they're split on two different tribes. Secondly.
Okay, well, that's, it's Ethan, still his
no,
fault.
No. I'm not done. Secondly, Ethan's third outing was... How many years later on Winners at War in a modern season, very out of his water, never played with hidden immunity idols, never had to play with any secret advantages, all that sort of stuff. Both times, very unfortunate circumstances. Now you can say the same thing for Malcolm. Both of his second outings, very unfortunate circumstances. He was going up against, like you said, an untouchable mastermind of the game, Cochran, and JT. So I can understand voting both ways, but my heart says Malcolm, but my brain is saying Ethan.
That's great. That
the whole Winners at War thing is like saying, it wasn't as fair for Ethan because he's not as good or adaptable. You know, there's this thing I read or that I saw some TikTok where it was like some guy was like praising Tom Brady. And he's like, you know, the reason he's so good is because he just throws it 5 yards down the field and like never takes those big risks. And it's like, that's basically saying like he's so good because he never tries to be like better than what he needs to be. I feel like the better people will rise to the top. Like, I feel like Malcolm at least tried to do more so than Ethan. You know, if Ethan was a better player, he would have risen more than he did in Winners at War.
And the idea of him being at a disadvantage because he's never played with idols before, he played the game two times prior, then got introduced to idols, which weren't even a factor before he got voted off. So it shouldn't even matter. But with that logic, he had two times playing the game to understand every aspect of it without idols. Malcolm came into his first game not knowing how to play the game with idols at all. So it's a moot point. In fact, I would say it's more of a disadvantage to Malcolm for not knowing how to play the game at all, where Ethan had multiple times to play it. Additionally,
yeah,
that was not a factor at that point. He got voted out early both times. In fact, in All-Stars, he got voted out by his friend. So he just socially was not able to convince anybody to do anything. So I think
special friend favor.
Yeah, he did not get a special friend favor. I just think that the facts do point, and I don't dislike Ethan. I just think Malcolm's the better player, to be honest with you.
That's fair.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Suri versus Tom. Dude, two winners going at it at this stage in the bracket? No way. Well,
Suri's not a winner.
Oh, shit. Fucking should be like a three-time winner, but... All
right, so Suri and Tom. So here's the argument here. They went against each other, and Suri lost.
Yeah, they did, like, legitimately go up against each other. They had a fight. And that was an amazing move, too, on Tom's part.
Yeah.
To screw up that split vote.
But, the only person to best Suri early in the game is Tom Westman.
Yeah. The only other people to best her are, like, twists in the game. I think she lose in fire making in Panama. I forget.
Yeah.
She lost fire making. Then she lost because there was a final two instead of a final three. Then she lost because, like, no one voted for her.
Yeah, and then she lost because of advantage get-in.
Yeah.
Do we go but based off
Tom's of... the only person to really get around normally.
Do we go based off of that? Because
I'm just putting it out there, man.
It is interesting that...
And Tom also won.
Yeah.
Tom played one of arguably the most dominant games, especially early Survivor.
Yeah, he's another person that had people throw the game to him at the end.
Yeah. He literally did, yeah.
He literally did. That's crazy.
He's just like, I'm only going to drop out if you vote me out. What the fuck?
Okay.
Deal.
I'm only going to lose if I lose. The only way you're going to make me lose is if you lose me.
I think I might have to go Tom here on that knowledge.
I don't.
Yeah, you go Tom. Yeah, we're going Suri.
The thing about Suri, or like the most dominant games too, is I feel like she did that like arguably three times, played the most dominant game ever. There's just one little factor that happened. And I mean, I guess at final six of Game Changers, who knows, you know, but who knows, like, even if she made it through to five, if she would have made it to
But
the
that's end. The thing. Nobody was targeting her at that point. It was final six. I think if she makes it to the final three, she wins just because of her legacy, straight up. Yeah, it's like, damn.
Obviously, but, like, at four and five, you have to start thinking about, like, I mean, Suri's, like, the most lovable non-winner ever. So, like, I feel like that would probably go into a lot of their thinking of and who to vote out in the final five and four. And she's probably not going to win the challenge or find an idol.
For the record, I vote to Suri.
No, you already voted Tom. We voted Suri.
Yeah,
no,
it's a 3-0.
We convinced you. That's why we're going to be good at Survivor and you're not.
Go fuck yourself. Okay.
Ooh. I feel like these were people on the same season, John Cochran and Andrea. And I think they literally went against each other. Or again. I feel like that was Brenda versus Andrea more so.
Yeah.
But Cochran was on Brenda's side. And then Cochran took out Brenda.
And then Cochran played one of the most dominant Survivor games ever.
The thing is, now that I think about it, because I forgot what we were saying that made me think of that. I always think, like, is that the most dominant? I don't think it's the most dominant in, like, the Tony sense in, like, Kagayan, where it's like, I'm on top the entire time and I'm untouchable. He was relatively under the works, under the wall. Or because we were talking about, like, Malcolm and how it's like, oh, he was in opposition with Cochran. I don't think so. He did, at that point, Cochran wasn't really cementing himself as, like, the I'm the dominant king right now. Because, I mean, Philip was the leader until he got voted out. Until after that, I feel like it was more so, like, the fight was Andrea and Brenda for, like, who's top dog. And then after Brenda won, then Cochran went for Brenda. And then, you know, so after final, I think Brenda gets out at six. It's like, all right, Cochran is on top right now. And then Eric's hurt. And then so it's like how there weren't too many votes where he was like so clearly in charge. He just did play like such an exceptional game of like getting the right people to the end because he like obviously beats anyone in that final five after Brenda gets out.
You don't think that he was controlling a lot of those votes, though?
Maybe behind the scenes, but I just feel like in terms of, like, the dominance, it's like if you're not obviously leader, I feel like it's less dominant than people like Tony, who was, like, obviously.
No, I agree. I wouldn't classify it as one of the most dominant wins ever. Another thing is, if Eddie wins that immunity, who wins Karamoan?
God, I just don't want to know. I don't want to think. Because Eddie wins, Cochran gets voted out, I assume. And who's the other? Oh, Sherry, was that?
Sherry and Dawn.
Sherry, Dawn, and Eddie.
Eddie. I guess, the worst final three ever.
I guess it'd be Eddie. They'd probably go the underdog route. But yeah, that's what I mean, is that, like, after Brenda, it was real slim pickings for who was best. And I think Cochran got away with, you know, Eric getting hurt. And so it's like, all right, I only have to survive one more.
Yeah.
I still think with that in mind, I'm voting Cochran.
I'm going to go Andrea.
Because this is, again, it's like, well, Cochran won. And Cochran, like, was a big part of voting out Andrea.
One of the most consistent players to ever play is Andrea.
Yeah, that's why I think I'm going to go with her, too.
That one was sad.
That was a shocker, too.
That one hurts.
Yeah.
Going into that, I thought Cochran was going to win.
Not I also just sure. love Andrea so much.
I think I literally started off that matchup, and I was like, so it's Cochran, right?
This is a toughie.
Tyson and Kim Spradlin. Wolf.
And we've been through, like, 8 matchups so far.
We are at 43 minutes.
Oh, my God. Tyson versus Kim. Both played arguably the or two of the most dominant games. Because unlike Cochran, I feel like Tyson had a hand.
Yeah.
And like I think the leader most of that time.
What I think is more impressive about Tyson's game is everybody on the bottom knew that he was in charge and constantly said to get him out, and nobody turned on him. Whereas Kim, I think, was better at being in control, but nobody was really calling her out for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I usually say that, like, the games that are more impressive are the ones where everyone knows how much of a threat you are, and you still somehow not even just stay there, but are top dog the entire time.
And Tyson did that.
I think another thing that's going to push it in Kim's favor for me is the fact that Tyson did do that weird vote in Heroes vs. Villains.
That is true. That is one of, like,
bad move. Regardless of the way that you look at it, and Kim never made a really bad move like that.
Yeah, it was also like Kim came back and was just pretty underwhelming. She, like, made it far, but just didn't do a lot.
I mean, sure, but it's kind of all up to the fact that it was kind of the Tony show. Like, I feel like regardless of what she would have done, people were so mystified by what Tony was saying and doing that they just trusted him more blindly than anything, which is a testament to Tony's game, but I don't think that should be a detriment to Kim's game.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I just, because it's hard, because it's like, yeah, Tyson has 4 games, you know, she has 2, and they both have 1 amazing game, and then the other games don't even hold a candle, but I have trouble looking past just, like, their best, you know?
Yeah.
Since it is, like, so different. And I feel like Tyson is just also the more iconic Survivor player and, like, one of the best, like, reality faces, you know, and is, like, so recognizable and played the game in such an interesting way. where it's just like Kim played it like the best, but Tyson played it like the most interesting.
And think of, and also just think about the seasons that they're both on. Kim is on One World, a boring ass season, and Winners at War. Tyson's on Winners at War, Heroes versus Villains, maybe one of the best, Blood vs. Water, which is great, and Token Sheens, which is pretty great. So there's that too.
Okay, yeah, but you're factoring in the overall perception of the season in terms of...
No, I'm factoring into what their season that they're on and their impact on it.
I think also just the difficulty of the season too, because Kim, you know, One World is, I feel like, is similar to Redemption Island, where it was like, yeah, that was, they were like, people just catered to Rob, you know. I feel like there weren't a lot of hard heavy hitters on One World.
I don't know. I'm voting Kim.
Water.
I'm voting Tyson.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Tyson. That one hurts though. Sorry, Kim.
I don't think I've been on the right side for like the last like four matchups.
Who are you, Aubrey? Yeah. All right, Coach and Jeremy. I mean,
it's Jeremy. I love Coach, but it's Jeremy.
I do love Coach, and I think he also embodied the idea of like turning your game around. And it was just that he just had the stigma of being Coach, and people couldn't look past that, and I feel bad for him for it. I think Jeremy arguably like did that better though with his win in Second Chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, he realized that he needs to have people in front of him to win the game.
Yeah, he embodied that shield strategy very well.
He encapsulated the shield strategy because other players have tried it, but not to his success.
Well, I always think of Tony as like the ultimate shield guy, because he did that in Kagayan, where it's like, I have my shields until I need them.
Yeah, but let's also consider the difficulty of the season. Jeremy was able to do that in Second Chance, which is a huge achievement.
Yeah. I was just saying that like Tony did it first.
Yeah, but the only difference is Tony was still known as the target a lot of the time. A lot of people knew that he was crazy running around. I don't like Jeremy's name didn't really get brought up.
Yeah.
Which is a testament. But anyway, moving on.
The Queen versus Todd.
The Queen versus Todd. Now,
this is tough.
Sanders played a plethora of times. Todd has played once. Yeah. Sanders won twice.
I think it's Sanders.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to go Todd, and I was going to have to fight for it.
No, I'm going Sandra.
Oh. I'm going Todd.
I'm going Sandra.
I thought you were going to say Todd, Connor.
Yeah, just to put you on the wrong side again.
Hey, I was on the right side of Jeremy.
Well, that was because that was clear. What the...
One works. That whatever.
I voted... Wait.
No, I'm just so self-centered. My bad.
Another pretty easy one, in my opinion.
This one is kind of like, well, one of them won, but like this time, like I believe it.
Yeah, it's Lucina.
The last two times we were like, well, one of them won. I ended up voting for the other one.
Well, to be fair, once again, Amanda made it to the very end twice, and on her third game, she made it farther than Sarah did on her first game. So overall placement, she's better.
Yeah, I think
at the same time,
testament to Sarah though that the time she made it to the end, she won, and also like her second best. Like if she had won that fire making challenge, she had a very good chance of winning too. Whereas like Amanda did all you could do, like similar to Russell, like do all you can do to get to the end, but it's more than just getting to the end. And I think she proved that she's not as good of a player as Sarah because, you know, she's been there twice but couldn't do it.
I mean, if they vote out Todd at the Final Four, she probably wins.
I mean, yeah, maybe, but...
Courtney got more votes than her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if that means she wins. I don't think Courtney wins.
Yeah.
But you also have to factor in the fact that Amanda just does... Like, she cannot articulate at all when she's at Final Tribal. So I do think, to be honest, because of the way that Courtney was able to perform at the Final Tribal, no matter who she's up against, if Todd's not there, I don't think Amanda still can pull that out simply because we saw her do it twice on both ends, even though she was going up against Parv, who at that point in the game, come on. But
if you said this, if you said this in 2016, people would laugh at you. You just, Sarah, her first game only.
Yeah.
Amanda clearly is the better, which is just crazy to think about.
It's crazy, but that just, it's a testament to the level of game at that Lacina is at. I mean, like Camden, like I think the biggest factor, like, yeah, she played a dominant game in Game Changers. She played a really strong game in Game Changers. But the fact of the matter is, if she wins that fire making challenge, there is nothing stopping her from winning Winners at War as well. And if she does both of that, cements her.
Maybe. And maybe not. Natalie could get more votes.
No shot she gets more votes over Sarah.
Total shot. Tony was clearly the person in control. People might, like, just because Sarah was second in command doesn't mean she gets all of Tony's votes. I think
there was apparently, like, a plethora of people that were like, well, we want to vote Michelle just so Natalie doesn't get second. I think a lot of those people would vote Sarah. So I feel my guess would be that she still wins. I don't think it's super cut and dry, but that would be my guess. But either way, I think it also goes back to similarly to Wentworth, where I'm like, if you don't do as well on your first season but do amazing after that, then I'm going to think higher of you than, you know, you doing worse and worse, which I guess
Amanda didn't do. She went back to back Final Tribal Councils, which is
her third time. Though it was like the obvious worst time.
I'm going to Lacina. Camden, are you going Lacina?
We're still talking here, dude. I just think that out of all the people that have been able to do that, her and Russell,
Natalie, or just lose twice in the end.
We'll just go to back to back.
Oh, back-to-back.
Yeah.
Back-to-back Final Tribals. It's hard to do, man.
Yeah, it is hard to do, but she couldn't get the job done both times.
But it's not like she got wiped in Micronesia. It was close.
Yeah, it was close. I think that was similarly to All-Stars, though, where people were bitter. So they were like, the people that were more bitter voted for Amanda because they kind of thought, like, or maybe they didn't think Parvati played the better game, but it was just bitterness overcame that, where I think, like, we can look back and think that Parvati definitely played the better game of the two.
No, I agree. I think the right person won, but that doesn't matter. Not always the right person wins.
I also think that a man, like, don't know if this is a hot take, but I truly don't think that if it was a final three, she would get any votes.
She would get Ozzy's easy.
Yeah, okay. She'd get Ozzy.
Okay, one.
She'd probably still get James's, to be honest.
I think a lot of people
over
said
Ceri?
Yeah.
I think Ceri still wins. But I think she definitely gets Ozzy's.
You think James votes for Amanda over Ceri?
I think he really could. Yeah, I think he really could.
Regardless of the factor, she would still get third place.
Depends how the votes break down. We've been over this, but it depends on how the votes break down.
I still think it's
that's, but that hardly matters.
This is splitting hairs. I think it's still more so that Sarah's just better.
Yes. Okay.
If she won the fire making, she likely would have won twice, whereas Amanda had the chance to win twice and didn't. You know, in terms of getting to the end, she's 0-2. Sarah is 1-0 and super close to being 2-0. And I feel like that's because she set herself up better than Amanda did, you know, by going after the people she needed to go after in the end. And Amanda didn't do that. She didn't go after Todd ever when she should have seen, she should have saw that he was going to get a lot of votes.
Totally agree. I vote for Sarah.
Camden, go. Camden, oh. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you
I'm having a conversation here.
it's better to talk about it, because we might bring something up that we think, oh yeah, I guess.
Like, we're deciding, like, we're going through them all here. This is the round to do it. Also, if Sarah won that fire making, we would have been locked into having two female two-time winners.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That would have been crazy. We were also.
So this is a sad one.
So here's the deal. I get it. Tony's a two-time winner. Michelle's the only player to play multiple times and never be voted out and make it to the final tribal council.
Yeah. So
I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think she realistically should. If Natalie isn't there, she places, like, if that situation isn't a thing, she places second, I think.
Yeah. Like, I just think that Tony both times arguably had, like, in those two wins, he has arguably the two most dominant wins, because, you know, Winners at War was a lot more laid back, but he was still very much in control. And people knew it. I mean, by the end, everyone was like, why aren't you all going for Tony? You know, he's going to win. And in Cagayan, maybe even more impressive, because he never won immunity, had idols that I don't think he ever played for himself. And he was top dog and went through all this without having using any advantages. Like, he went and found those advantages. So, like, a testament to, like, oh, you know, he went out and looked for them, got all that stuff, and didn't even have to use it. And then even after that, you know, it goes to a final two instead of a final three. Oh, and you would have to find someone completely fucking stupid to bring him to a final two. And he convinced the guy to take him. I feel like he, even before Winners at War, it was like Cagayan is just the most dominant game of anyone ever, in my opinion. And I think Winners at War cemented how much better he really is. It was like Game Changers was like, yeah, was a fluke, because he was, I bet if he didn't win Cagayan, he tried harder. But, like, since he did win, I think he was just like, I'm just going to be fucking crazy. And then he also embodied the bettering yourself in Winners at War by being like, I'm going to be more laid back and reserved. And then he won both ways.
I think that Camden, you credit Hayden's move in Blood versus Water as, like, the greatest social play of all time. I would disagree. I would say that Tony winning Cagayan by convincing Wu to take him is, without a doubt in my mind, the greatest social strategy gameplay move of all time. There is no logical, strategical reason that Wu should have done that move, and yet Tony was still able to get into his ear and convince him to do the same thing. That literally the night before Wu makes that decision, he tells Cass verbatim, I would be the dumbest player in Survivor to do literally the move he does less than 24 hours later.
Yeah.
It is insane. To all her credit, absolutely no love loss in this matchup up against anybody else in this round of the March Madness bracket. Michelle goes on. Tony is the only person that she can't beat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Michelle has a case for, like, top five of all time.
100%. I think that she embodies the underdog player so much. And not only that, but she's great at challenges. She wins challenges when she needs to in the clutch a lot. Yeah. She does that very well. And she's very good at social gameplay. She's very good at putting herself in a position to join alliances or to wiggle her way into a scenario that would benefit her. I think that, and she is never, once again, I think it's a huge credit to her as being the only player to never be voted out and to be make to the final tribal both times you play.
Yeah.
Very, very impressive.
It totally is.
So are we going to go Tony?
I'm voting for Michelle, but yes.
Yeah, Tony. Tony's moving on.
All right. Now, Spencer versus JT. Now, the thing is, like, it was super close with JT versus Fishback, and I just feel like Spencer is a better Fishback.
Yeah, I agree. Spencer bested Fishback.
Yeah.
I'm not letting JT get any further in this competition.
Same.
Spencer is taking JT out.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one wants to elaborate. We can just
This was the only matchup that I was, aside from I think the Jerry and James one earlier. This is the only matchup that I saw that I was like, that's an easy one.
All right. Oh, this is a toughie. Boston Rob versus Yule Kwan.
Ooh.
Cause I love that lesson so much of Cook Islands of like why Yule won, you know? And I just feel like no one could have done that better than him. And it's kind of like, oh, it took Rob four tries, but I feel like also it's super impressive to do it on your fourth rather than your first, you know, with such a big target you are, but also
such a big target with a season that was made for you to win.
But yeah, it was like the season was made for you. And, you know, he had, like, arguably the most gullible tribe of all time, other than Andrea.
Without Redemption Island, I don't see him winning any other season.
Yeah. But the thing is, it was, like, he deserved to win All-Stars, I feel like. And I'm glad
that fair.
He did. Now that he and Amber both have a win, that's awesome. I just feel like if the gods were just, then Rob controlled the season. He should have won if the jury wasn't bitter. So it's hard to be like, well, you know, I'm gonna knock down his Redemption Island game.
Yeah, but I think that to Rob's credit and how iconic he is, I know I've been harping on the whole Survivor Mount Rushmore. I don't think there's any other player out there aside maybe from Suri and Parv that I wouldn't be surprised to hear his name come up in that conversation. But
yeah,
to that same credit, I think that because Yule's win was so great and the player that he is, 9 times out of 10, not necessarily like the most casual Survivor fans, but when you talk to people that are like us, that love the game, that analyze it the way that we do, that think about it the way that we do, we all talk about Yule. Because Boston Rob is a great player, but Yule is on another level.
I think Boston Rob does get hyped up more so, and his shortcomings aren't pointed out as much. His gameplay is swing and miss. He either makes to the end or he's gone early. That's his gameplay. And I will say, like, he very much got bested by Russell and Parv in Heroes versus Villains. He totally got outplayed there. I think that there are shortcomings to his game. When he doesn't have complete control, he has no way to adapt to those situations. And you see that in every season that he plays in.
In his when
he
five...
In Marquesas, when he loses control, he's done. He can't... He has no way to adapt. In Winners at War, when he loses control there, I mean, he even should have had control there. He just tries to implement his strategy that would work on dumb people onto Winners. And Heroes versus Villains, he just gets bested when he had the majority. I think his shortcomings are apparent no matter how great he is.
In his 5 attempts, he gets to the end twice. Great credit to his game. Loses one of them, wins the other, but is pre-merge in all the other 3 attempts. And I just don't see, like, aside from, like, I mean, we all believe that Yule should have made it to merge. Hell, maybe if Xander didn't quit, he could have made it to merge in Winners at War, and it would have been a totally different merge, because that's the type of player that Yule is. If Boston Rob were to make it to merge in Winners at War, it wouldn't have made that much of a difference. It would have just been another early target.
What's interesting is Yule might have the calmest win ever.
Yeah.
Here's why I'm going to go Rob. Because Yule played with too dominant of an idol. I always think about what would have happened if Yule didn't have that powerful of an idol, you know. I think it's a lot harder to sway Jonathan. And then it might just be they get picked off. And it's harder to assume that he just would have been as dominant as he was without the super idol. And Rob's just strategic mind, while yes, doesn't work half the time, it is just like so iconic. And like, even like when you watch him on Amazing Race, like there, it's hard to have any strategy in Amazing Race, but he like brought strategy to the game, and it was like super cool to see. And he like got people to like wait, like sit out of a challenge and like take a time penalty with him and stuff like that. And he just, I feel like his mind races arguably more than Yule's did, because, you know, I feel like it didn't have to race as much because he had the super idol. And then once you flip Jonathan, you're making it to the end no matter what. Which I think
I'm so glad
that idol at four. I think that was another thing, because I think that was a thing where he was like thinking about giving it to Becky in that 2-2 split vote at Final Four. He really had a super idol the whole game. And I always think back then, like, yeah, why would you target that, you know? And I just feel like between Rob's five times playing, even though a lot of them ended in not making it to the merge even, I feel like his legacy in Survivor, I think, is much higher than Yule's. So that's my
point. I'm going Yule.
Also, just want to point out, that'd be pretty cool to see Rob and Russell next round.
It could be Tommy.
Could be.
I'm gonna go Rob.
Nice. Nice. I get my way again.
That's so fucking stupid.
I'm sorry.
All right, we got Tommy Sheehan and Russell Hance. Tommy Russell won. Hance,
8-16.
Tommy won. Tommy one time play too.
Tommy one time play.
I mean, also to his credit, played a phenomenal enough social game that he was literally brought to the end and won the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Russell Hance could never matchup.
Yeah.
It's also like I said with Yule, like Survivor just has so much great lessons. Russell maybe being the greatest lesson is that like he showed like, yeah, you could get to the end and might be able to do it quote unquote easily if you do it the way he does it, but you're not gonna win. So it's funny to think that like Russell can never win this game, and I think that's a lesson learned from Survivor. That being said, like the better player, it's like how much of a factor am I considering like the sitting there at Final Tribal Council and after that, you know, it's like, is it 50-50? Is it like tribal? It's like the final three is like this much, but then there's the whole rest of the game where I feel like Russell, you know, had a more impressive run by being or playing from the bottom, you know.
Two of the most dominant back-to-back season runs in the show's history.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Russell.
I don't get it. We don't got to talk more about it. It's Russell.
And just more iconic. It's Russell.
And we get Boston Rob versus Russell Hance. So Boston Rob's going to the Elite Eight.
All right, what are we at time-wise? Boston
Rob versus Tommy would be pretty.
We are at 1:10.
So I guess it'll be another hour or 2 hour one.
Hey guys, basically this episode has been insane to edit. We didn't anticipate to be recording for, I think the grand total was like a little under 4 hours. Somewhere between 3 and 4 hours, so definitely going to be splitting it up into 3 episodes. So sorry to say, but this is the end of part 2 on the March Madness bracket. Of course, we didn't anticipate it to be this long for the second recording, so I have to do this little mini intro, or intro, outro for you guys. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media, at Survivors Ready Pod on TikTok and Instagram, and then at Survivors Ready RDY Pod on Twitter. Also, remember, we have a video format of the podcast up on our YouTube channel, Survivors Ready Podcast, and you can find all these links either linked on our link tree on all of our socials or in the description of whatever podcasting app you are watching this or slash listening to this on. And if you are listening on apps like Apple Podcasts or Spotify or just any app that can review the podcast, it would mean a whole heap of a lot to each and every one of us if you were to rate us 5 stars and possibly give us a review. The only way that this show is going to improve and begin to elevate to like the next level, whatever that may mean, is if we have feedback. So if you are willing to give us the time of day, that would mean so much to us, because this is clearly a project that we are all so passionate about. It's something that we want to continue to grow and progress with as we move forward, as we, like I said, begin to build a community. Next week is not going to be part 3 of the March Madness bracket. Next week on the Survivors Ready podcast, we have our very first guest on the show. Camden, Connor, and myself will be sitting down and chatting with Peridium. For those who don't know, Peridium is a wonderful, absolute pioneer of content creation when it comes to reality game shows by CBS like Survivor and Big Brother. The three of us have individually, you know, found our way to his content. I've been watching for years. I think we'll get more into it in the interview. I'm not too sure, but I support him on Patreon, and I'm super duper duper thankful that he is agreeing to sit down and talk to us and give us the lowdown on like beginning to be a content creator in this such a niche space, growing a community, knowing what the audience wants, while also tempering and making what you want to make. I'm sure it's going to be an absolute blast. Clearly, we still haven't recorded it. I'm just so excited. It's going to be so much fun. But yeah, that's going to be next week. So don't miss that one. It will be linked everywhere. Same with this episode. And yeah, I believe that is going to be it for this week on the Survivors Ready podcast. Thank you guys so much, and we will see you next time.